Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
First saw you paint the edges of my sister's hair vibrant. You've been hiding in a garden in South America for centuries, fuchsia. When they first found you, you were striking and breathtaking to behold, dancing on the feet of women that have nothing left but them and the sunrise. You awake even before the sun does. You are running across the sky with oranges and yellows, telling everyone that it's a new day.
Good evening. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to the Power of Poetics, the Blog Talk Radio sponsored by the DC Poetry Project. We'd like to say hello to all of our listeners from around the world. We've got an exciting program tonight. Tonight we are saluting women because it's National Women's History Month. And before we begin our journey in that regard, one thing, the piece that you just heard was Fuchsia from Monk Turner's Kaleidoscope Project. Again, we here at the DC Poetry Project are extremely proud and happy because this month, this very month, we celebrate our fifth anniversary. I know. Yes, I know. It's an auspicious occasion. That's right, it is. It's our fifth anniversary. It's been a long journey. Thank you very much. It's been a long journey, but we've made it 5 long years, and it's been a great 5 years, and we've worked with fantastic people throughout the course of these 5 years. But nothing is more special than the members of the DC Poetry Project. They are incredible, and I'm so glad to have had an opportunity to work with all of you over the course of this period of time, and we will continue our journey. This month also, there are other exciting programs taking place in the city, one of which is the Splendid Wake 3. It's the third annual public program celebrating poetry in the nation's capital from 1900 to the present. And this program will be held on March 20th, 2015, at 7 o'clock at George Washington University. And some of the people that the program will focus on are people who include such names as Georgia Douglas Johnson, who I'll talk about later on tonight, Mae Miller, the federal poets, as well as looking at the modern urban griot. So this is going to be a really great program, so we hope you have an opportunity to attend. Also, the DC Poetry Project, one of the things that we attempt to do is to truly immerse ourselves in the community and truly become active in terms of participating with the people around us. So usually we schedule a volunteer activity every month, and this month our volunteer activity will be working with the Colon Awareness Society, Colon Cancer Awareness Society here in Washington, D.C. And this will be Sunday, March 22nd. There's more information on the website. And finally, as we continue our celebration of our birthday, we'll continue this birthday celebration throughout the course of March and April. And on April the 11th, we will host a program at Eatonville Restaurant here in the city. It will be the fifth anniversary special event called Poets on Fire. The featured poet will be Kim V. Miller. The tickets are $20, so please come out and support the DC Poetry Project. So tonight, let's get to it. We are celebrating women. Women in terms of their lives, as well as their intestinal fortitude and will to continue this life's journey. So March, again, is National Women's History Month, and our theme is celebrating women, courage, vision, and hope through art. So tonight, hopefully, we have a number of callers who'd like to discuss that topic. We have a couple on the line now. I'd like to bring them in. So again, this is The Power of Poetics. And if you'd like to call in and share your poetry or the works of someone that you know that are really your favorite artist, the number is 646-716-8754. Then again, this is The Power of Poetics. I'm going to open up the lines. Good evening, callers. How are you tonight? Area code 301.
Doing great.
Hello. Great. How are you, 805-858? Area code 301.
Hi.
How are you there?
This is Safia.
Safia, how are you? How are you?
Good.
Great. I'm glad you called in. And Kofi, always. Again, we're celebrating National Women's History Month. And what we'd like to do is to salute the many women poets who've shaped our world and changed the course of history through their works. These women lifted their voices through their words to fight for rights, to be free of discrimination and stereotypes, to break free from rules set forth by men, family, and society, and most importantly, to be themselves. That's what's critical. So what I'd like us to do is to start. If someone would like to share a piece of poetry, please do so. Or I can begin, however we'd like to do it. Who'd like to go first? Safia?
Sure. This is.
And let me add this
piece.
First. Safia Stewart,
yes,
who is a poet in her own right, and she was one of our featured poets several weeks ago. And so we're glad to have her here. All right. Safia.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a piece that I just wrote a few days ago. It's not necessarily specifically about women, but it's more specifically about faith. I always believed in miracles, turning water into wine, back from the dead in 3 days' time, from walking streets lined with bright red light, to gliding through streets paved with gold. I was young and now I'm old, and I've never seen the righteous forsaken. Yet I've seen little boys and girls have their innocence taken, and the scars that are left behind awaken a sadness that never seems to dissipate. And all we can do is wait, being sure of what we hope for, certain of what we could not see. We died to ourselves, and as we lived on bended knee, we asked him to heal our broken hearts and bind up our wounds. But did we say too much? Did we speak too soon? To experience wonders that cannot be fathomed, and to him who could do more than we could have ever imagined, we say, we wait for the day that ill spirits are ejected and yearn for the peace of souls resurrected, all because we have faith.
Wow.
And that's it.
I was going to say, talk about your inspiration. I think I know it personally, but, I mean, share your thoughts on that piece. Share your thoughts, please.
So actually, it was I wrote it based on a prompt. It was like, write something that talks about your spirituality, your personal faith, you know, what that looks like to you. So when I thought about my own faith and how that shows up and what that means, that's what it looks like, and that's how it plays out in my life. So that was what was behind that piece.
You know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you are the only woman on the line at this particular point. What does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a woman?
Oh, it is, you know, great question. I think that, and no, you know, this is no shade to the men out there, but I think women are so complex. I think it's very unique position to be a woman, because you fulfill so many roles, and I feel like just personally as a woman, and particularly as a black woman, I feel like the expectations are so high. you're a mother, you're a sister, you're a daughter, you're a cousin, you're, you know, you're all of these things, and I feel like the expectation is to do them all well and do them all in a way that you have to lead, but you have to lead in a very soft, nurturing, feminine way, and anything else is not necessarily tolerated.
You know,
and so there's
Steve,
a lot of...
Please, please continue. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
No, it's just a lot of nuances, and you just have to be very careful in how you navigate things.
I was going to state here that Simone de Beauvoir, an existentialist philosopher, said, one is not born a woman, one becomes one.
Oh, absolutely.
Kofi, is one born a man? Is one born a man, or what does one become a man? Kofi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello?
What do you think about that question? There's one. Okay, please.
I think you couldn't have said it better. Whoever, I mean, whose quote was that again? One is not born a woman, becomes a woman.
Simone de Beauvoir.
Because it's absolutely true, and it's the same as when there's so much talk about being a man. I mean, I guess you can transpose that to the man being a man also, and the fact that sometimes you have people as have kids running around but not taking up responsibility, and they call themselves men or fathers, you know. So I guess you can transpose that to that, and I think that's a deep one, actually. And it says everything.
Well, Safi, you said so much in terms of what you said about the nuances that a woman needs to paint on her canvas to survive. I mean, to me, that sounds like it would be a very heavy, heavy load to bear, potentially a burden in some situations. What do you think about that?
I do at times feel like it is a heavy load to bear, you know, but I think at the same time, I think men bear a load too. It's just a different type of load, you know, because I feel like, you know, women are seen as more of the nurturers and the caretakers. And at the same time, you know, women are typically blessed with that strength of endurance. But, you know, and that's kind of our load to bear. But men are expected to be the providers and the protectors and, you know, the professors and all of that. And that's their load to bear. So I feel like, you know, both of us have a load. It's just
a different type of load. Here's a piece by African Plato, and it's called This Woman Works. And it was originally posted on the website Wamathai, WAMATHAI.com. This woman's work. She's the epitome of strength, the sun from which all seek life. Under her breast we are nourished. In her embrace we are warmed. This woman works, cultivates her field as the sun rises, stirs her pot as the sun sets. This woman, my mother, she's the continuation of a lineage, the link between past and future, the present, a missing rib to one son of Adam. Her eyes are not only windows to the soul, but a reflection of her society. This woman works, gains knowledge in books and art, the light that guides all around her. This woman, my sister, she's the glue that pieces together a broken heart, the blanket of warmth from a cold shoulder, Rosa Parks on a bus seat. She symbolizes beliefs and faith. This woman works. The star that shines in the darkest of night, the way that bears the will of a people. This woman, my lover, my friend, this woman works, and today I celebrate her.
Nice piece.
What was nice about it, my friend?
Well, so much, I guess. I mean, you cover just the, I guess, the scope of womanhood, I guess, and also the woman who is the ultimate multitasker, I believe. And it just reminds me of, I mean, I just reflecting back on seeing my sister or my mother do things that I could only dream of. I mean, sometimes you wonder how they manage to go through and do things so well to, I mean, get us to be whatever we are, actually, ultimately, really. And I think that is, in a way, that's what I was hearing, that's what I was reading, you know, when you read that out.
Well, I agree. I mean, just through the course of history, I mean, one of the things that I've never, ever really understood, if that's the best way to state it, is that why women are not valued more. They are the deliverers of all of us. And I just don't understand that. It just behooves me no end to see a stadium full of 50, 60,000 people at a football game, knowing that all those people were given birth to by women. And then women are still not valued like they should be. I just, from a hierarchical perspective, I still don't understand that. Any ideas, any thoughts on that topic, on that statement?
This is Safia. I really appreciate that poem just from the perspective of a woman, because I think sometimes I consider myself a Martha. And what that means, I mean, it's a biblical reference. And just kind of just doing, and you don't even really stop to recognize or realize what you're doing it. But it's nice to know that somebody else sees you and they notice that and they appreciate that. And so that really, you know, lifted my spirits as a woman to have, to just hear that. So I really appreciated that in that way.
Right. Well, let's take just a little short break like we always do, and we'll come right back. Michael Ingram, I'd like to welcome you to the DC Poetry Project's Power of Poetics. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 646-716-8754. The lines are open. If you'd like to tweet in a message, again, as I've kind of processed this in my own mind, this is not only a celebration of women poets, this is also a celebration of women. This is Women's History Month, so it's more than just compartmentalized into poetry. It's about the woman's story, in my mind. And so I think the pieces of poetry that we're sharing tonight, some that are self-written, some that are written by others, is just about being one half of the equation. So let's continue this journey. Do you have another piece, Safia?
You know what, I'm trying to find Phenomenal Woman by Maya Angelou, because mm-hmm. I just feel like mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I either did not share that or did not hear that.
Well,
I just pulled
okay.
I just
well,
pulled
while
it
looking?
Up.
Oh, did you? Okay, great, because I have a piece by Maya Angelou,
up.
Too. Fantastic, fantastic. Please, Phenomenal Woman by Maya Angelou.
Okay, so hopefully I can do this justice. Okay. Pretty women wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. But when I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man, the fellows stand or fall to their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes and the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist and the joy in my feet. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, it's in the arch of my back, the sun of my smile, the ride of my breath, the grace of my style. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman. That's me. Now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shop. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me passing, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palm of my hand, the need for my care, 'cause I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me. That's it. Phenomenal Woman by Maya Angelou.
What about that piece resonated with you? Probably one of the most famous poems of all time. What about that piece resonated with your spirit?
Absolutely. I love that piece and how she just totally owns herself as a woman, and she makes you own her as a woman. Like, I know who I am, appreciate who I am, and just puts it out there, and it's so proud and secure, and I just love that. It makes me want to be proud and want to be secure and want to really own and fully embrace my womanhood.
Any other thoughts? You know, Diane Westlake made the statement, and I'm going to be sharing different quotes that I found that were shared during Women's History Month. She made the statement that whatever the struggle, continue the climb. It may only be one step to the summit. I'm going to say that one more time. Whatever the struggle, continue the climb. It may only be one step to the summit. How do you interpret that?
So clarification, there may only be one step to the summit or one step
to the
from
summit.
The summit?
One step to
step
the
to
summit.
The... Oh, mm-hmm. Interesting.
I guess I'll take a stab at it.
I'll jump in there.
Okay. All right. That is important to keep going. You know that what's the real alternative other than to continue the fight, to continue the struggle, to continue to believe in yourself, like Dr. Maya Angelou's poem, to continue to believe in yourself, to view yourself as being phenomenal despite the storms and the trials and tribulations that one may experience. Because if you don't continue, how do you know that you won't reach your goal?
Anyone with perseverance, right?
Yes. One more time. I'm going to say that one more time.
Perseverance.
Yes. Perseverance, yes, correct.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else?
I guess when I hear that quote,
mm-hmm.
The first thing that comes to my mind is, wow, what a shame. What a shame to be one step away, and because of whatever the hindrance was, fear, self-doubt, whatever it is, to have missed that opportunity. So, I mean, it's incredibly powerful. It's a very different way to frame it. You know, instead of focusing on how difficult it is or how hard it is, you know, reframing it and looking at, listen, your opportunity, you know, your goal, that end goal could be one step away.
You know, to follow up with that, Helen Keller made the statement, "It's wonderful to climb the liquid mountains of the sky. Behind me and before me is God, and I have no fears."
Yeah.
It's wonderful to climb the liquid mountains of the sky. Behind me and before me is God, and I have no fears.
The liquid mountains of the sky.
That's a very powerful image.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
Some years ago, I was commissioned actually to write a piece of poetry for, I was a professor at Oregon State, and I was invited to write a poem for a woman. Her name was Carrie Hussell Ward, and she was the first African-American to graduate from Oregon State University. And this was in 1913. And during that particular time, I mean, Oregon was not a state where African Americans lived. I mean, a law had been passed stating that, no, they were not discriminatory. They just didn't want African Americans in the state at all. You know, so it was viewed as being a utopia. So there was this black woman at Oregon State University graduating in 1913, and in the classroom, this is from what I understand from history, the white students sat on one side. There was a curtain in the middle, and she sat on the other side by herself.
Wow.
Now, to me, that's such a powerful image to see this. This sheet, this metaphorical sheet, wasn't metaphorical, it was real, a sheet. Because, see, she lived in Portland, Oregon, and Corvallis, Oregon is 2 hours away. So if this is 1913, she had to make her way, not on a superhighway, not on a highway, from Portland to Corvallis to take classes. I mean, you talk about someone who's able to handle fear and to not be afraid of it. There's no way she could have been to have graduated.
Yeah.
So this piece is one, again, like I said, again, I was commissioned to write. They were, at the time, dedicating a new residence hall in her honor. So this is what I wrote. It's called "She Reached Out and Touched History." She reached out and touched history. Although many could not imagine that it was her plan, given that she was young, a life still developing, gelling as a creation, still being molded and forged in hues of ebony, bronze, and gold. Yet she reached out and touched history. Although the fathers of the day refused to believe that she could do so, given that she was a woman, the right to vote for the mothers of all fathers still in its infancy, the casing of a woman's world still regulated to the margins of society, despite pleas of social reform from suffragettes and cries of "Ain't I a woman too?" from noble voices that yelled out from the far reaches of distant cotton fields and other disdained places of work. Yet, she reached out and touched history, although the academicians of the day could not fathom that it was her plan. Yet she was gifted and had the desire and dedication to educate and uplift those who too sought knowledge, freedom, and power. She reached out and touched history. Although legions could not foresee it could be her plan, given that she was black, colored black, when black was not yet a color, human in one world and not the other, living in a space, time, and place when it was not conducive to be young, gifted, black, and to be a woman. Nevertheless, she reached out and touched history, and history observed and responded in kind and reached out and met her touch, applauding that she was young, full of hope and promise, reveling that she was a woman, one half of a whole, yet whole, perfect, and complete. relishing that she was gifted, leaving the hallowed halls of academe, a college graduate, learned as she set forth to conquer new horizons and find ways of surviving and thriving in a world where she had an opportunity to achieve despite all the odds of achieving. Celebrating proudly because she was black, convinced of her human right to exist, to learn to be free, to be Carrie. She reached out and touched history, and history responded in kind, reached out and met her touch. Destiny smiled and married their ebony night-hewn embrace, creating a legacy of opportunities for all of us to achieve our goals, reach dreams, and ascend undaunted by the limits of our imagination. She reached out and touched history and fought that fear. I'm sure there had to be fear in 1913. There's fear today. Talk about the nuances. There's fear today to make change, to do things, to be things outside the norm, outside what is expected of us as a race and what is expected of women to accomplish.
Wow. That's really powerful. I mean, I love the imagery of that because I could just, like, kind of close my eyes and, like, see this person kind of reaching out. Like, I could see the curtain. I could see, like, this person almost like you're reaching out for something to hold on to something to like keep them going. You know, and just thinking about what that actually means, all of the struggle, all of the sacrifice, all of the dying to yourself, all of the, you know, just the self-encouragement and everything that you have to do to keep going in situations, you know, like that. I mean, I went to school for engineering. Now I'm a black female going to engineering school. I mean, you know, which I of course can in no way, shape or form want to, you know, compare myself to this person. But in that situation, it was tough because it was just, you know, there's not a lot of you and. You know, a lot of people tell you don't belong there, and you know, in not too long ago. So it just to bring my mind to a point to imagine I'm the only one, I'm the first one, I'm making history, and to have the weight of that on your shoulders, it's just, it's incredible, and it just makes me extremely grateful for people that are so courageous. To just, you know, keep moving forward and keep looking forward.
You know, one of the sad things about her story to me is that she graduated. She never returned to Oregon State University, and she resumed her career as a maid for one of the rich families in Portland. I think she may have migrated south and started teaching, but she resumed her career being a maid after graduating.
Wow.
You know, Eleanor Roosevelt said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You're able to say to yourself, I lived through this horror. I can take the next thing that comes along. You must do the thing you think you cannot do."
Yeah.
I hate to continue talking here, but I do believe that that's one of the reasons why poetry is so important, because whether you can do those things in, quote, actuality or in your mind, they're both important. To be able to write about it, to be able to create a different world for yourself through your writing, I think is critical.
Yeah.
That's courage. That's courage. That's determination.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just having a conversation about something similar about how courageous it is to put your words out there. Because, you know, I feel like when I'm putting, just personally, when I'm putting my words out there, that's a piece of me. You know, it's a piece of me that I'm letting go. It's a piece of me that I'm exposing to the world. And the and I have to be prepared for it, take whatever the world says and however the world receives it. And so, yeah, I think there is a lot of courage that goes into poetry and really putting yourself out there in that way.
I agree. It does take courage.
Yeah.
To share your lived experience, to share your story. You know, as we talk about Black History Month being American history, Women's History Month is world history as well. American history, world history. I mean, there's no way that you can tease that out in a month.
Yeah. In the shortest month, you got that.
It's true. It's true. Do you have another piece? Anyone?
I don't. I have a piece. It's not my own. It's Gwendolyn
Brooks.
Okay.
Yes, please. Okay.
As,
great.
Some of you may or may not be familiar with her, but she's a pretty famous woman poet. So this is actually, she's actually one of my favorite women poets and one of my inspirations. And the piece that I'm going to read is entitled The Mother, and it's a little controversial. So The Mother by Gwendolyn Brooks. Abortions will not let you forget. You remember the children you got that you did not get. The damp small pulps with a little or with no hair. The singers and workers that never handled the air. You will never neglect or beat them or silence or buy with the sweet. You will never wind up the sucking thumb or scuttle off ghosts that come. You will never leave them, controlling your luscious sigh, return for a snack of them with a gobbling mother eye. I have heard in the voices of the wind the voices of my dim killed children. I have contracted, I have eased my dim gears at the breath they could never suck. I have said, sweet, if I have sinned, if I have seized your luck and your lives from your unfinished reach, if I stole your births and your names, your straight baby tears and your games, your stilted or lovely love, your tumults, your marriage's aches and your deaths, if I poisoned the beginnings of your breath, believe that even in my deliberateness, I was not deliberate. Though why should I whine? Whine that the crime was other than mine, since anyhow you are dead, or rather, or instead, you were never made. But that too, I am afraid, is faulty. Oh, what shall I say? How is the truth to be said? You were born, you had body, you died. It is just that you never giggled or planned or cried. Believe me, I loved you all. Believe me, I knew you, though faintly, and I loved you all. That was The Mother by Gwendolyn Brooks.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. Mm-hmm. What was your... I mean, the images, I mean, what does that piece mean to you?
What that piece means to me, just speaking as a woman, speaking as a mother, it is very real to me. It is very honest. And I love the transparency. I love the ownership. I mean, sometimes we don't necessarily own our actions. We don't take responsibility for what we've done, and we don't really realize the magnitude of our actions. And I feel like even though in this a decision was made to not be a mother, I still, as a mother who made an opposite decision, connect with that so much because so much goes into being a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is one of my favorite poems. It's one of my favorite pieces, though, you know, I don't necessarily come down on this side. But I respect someone who's going to be honest about what they've done, whether it's good, bad, or ugly.
Right.
So that's what I really like about this particular piece.
Any other thoughts? You know, one of my favorite pieces is by Maya Angelou, and it's a little different. Some of you have heard me recite it before, and I'm not going to say that it equates with that particular piece, but it's called The Caged Bird, and we can talk about it. The free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream to the current's end and dips his wings in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage, and wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze and trade winds soft through the sighing trees and the fat worms wetting on the dawn bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams. His shadow shouts on a nightmare scream. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. It's Maya Angelou. And I think to what you said about, in Gwendolyn Brooks' poem, about being free to state your mind, to state your peace, to do what's necessary for you, that you're not a, quote, caged bird. And sometimes people are caged and they don't know it. Or they don't know how to escape that cage. It seems so far, so outside the realm of possibility. It's hard to speak your truth. It's hard to live your truth. It's hard to be truthful. Any thoughts?
The other thing also about that is, even if somebody tries to limit you, you find a way to basically, I don't know the right way to use, but to prove that you've tied my leg, but I can do something else. So I'm still living, and I'm still living big. I'm still having a good time. I'm still enjoying the life, you know. So I guess there are always going to be some constraints. Some people are going to limit you. They're going to chain you. But then, I mean, you still have one more tool that God gave you to use. And this time, the caged bird will sing. Even if you've tied him, you caged him, he still can sing, and he's going to come out to the world. And that might be something of, I guess, be defiant in a way, as long as you're doing the right thing. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Well... Marian Anderson made this statement that as long as you keep a person down, some part of you has to be down there to hold him down. So it means that you cannot soar as you otherwise might.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. That is so true, though. That is so true. When you, it's true, though. I think just generally, when you focus a lot on other people and
negativity, that's what you're entrenched in. I mean, you don't have any choice but to be negative and to be in that space.
You know, I guess along with that, Anne Frank, here's another one, stated that the best remedy for those who are afraid, lonely, or unhappy is to go outside somewhere where they can be quiet along with the heavens, nature, and God, because only then does one feel that all is as it should be.
Yeah.
Feeling that all is as it should be, that can be a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, because I think it's just, it's cutting the noise.
Cutting the noise.
I mean, it's cutting the noise. It's so easy to get inundated with what's happening to me, what's happening to her, what's happening to everybody, and just everyday life and everything happening around you, but taking time to really stop and, you know, shut that down and block that out and just enjoy the peace and the nature around you.
Well,
you know,
that brings up a... Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
No, please. I was done.
Well, I was going to say that brings up a poem by Mary Oliver, who's a very famous poet, and she wrote a piece called The Summer Day. And this particular piece of poetry holds that the act of attention is a form of prayer. And it kind of goes along with what I just stated by Anne Frank. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? The grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And that's from her new and selected poems in 1992.
Yeah.
She paid attention. She shut out the noise. As you said, Sophia, and I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Let's take a short break and we'll come right back. Welcome to the Power of Poetics, the D.C. Poetry Project's open mic live show. We're on every Wednesday night. The call-in number is 646-716-8754. We are fortunate to have with us some fabulous people to help bring this program alive, and I want to thank them for being a part of this. I think it's so important that we celebrate the arts, we celebrate the contribution that women have made to the arts, that we celebrate women in general. And hopefully those who are listening and hopefully those who have an opportunity to download this episode will feel the same way. We've got about 10 minutes more. So, Safia, do you have any other pieces that you'd like to share? Or anyone? One of our listeners or caller in?
I'll have to look for something.
Okay. Well, what I'll do as we continue this, I'd like to recite a piece by Georgia Douglas Johnson. She's one of the seminal poets, seminal women poets during the Harlem Renaissance. And this piece was written in 1928. And it's titled, "I Want to Die While You Love Me," by Georgia Douglas Johnson. I want to die while you love me, while yet you hold me fair, while laughter lies upon my lips and lights are in my hair. I want to die while you love me and bear to that still bed your kisses turbulent unspent to warm me when I'm dead. I want to die while you love me. Oh, who would care to live till love has nothing more to ask and nothing more to give? I want to die while you love me and never, never see the glory of this perfect day grow dim or cease to be. Miss Douglas Johnson her work will be featured in the program on March 20th at George Washington University. The program titled A Splendid Wake 3, her work will be featured. You know, there are so many poets that we've yet to talk about, current and from the past, such as, again, Emily Dickinson, Nikki Giovanni, Kim Hyerson, Audre Lorde, Sarojini Naidu. Again, we talked about Mary Oliver, Sylvia Plath, Adrienne Rich, Naomi Shahab Nye, Edna St. Vincent Millay, Phyllis Wheatley. The number goes on and on and on in terms of women's contributions to the arts, in terms of poetry. And what we attempt to do in the D.C. Poetry Project is to champion all of our members, as well as share information about poets that may not be famous, but also poets who have opportunities to lift their words and share their lived experiences. Does anyone else have a piece?
So I have a piece.
All right, great.
It's not directly related to the topic, but...
Oh, not a problem. Well, at this point, not a problem. Not a problem. We're just glad you're here.
Okay. This piece is entitled A Future's Past. We go round and round with these ups and downs. I know them well, by name even. They're like childhood friends who live in memories and appear to remind us of yesteryear. I found safety there, and these famous tales I know by heart. The tissues are ready to catch my tears, the cushion to catch my fall. Unknown is what will happen to my tears on a cold, dry floor, or to my body as it falls and hits the ground. Will it break? Will it bleed? Will I be okay?
Please share that one more time, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
A future's past. We go round and round with these ups and downs. I know them well, by name even. They are like childhood friends who live in memory and appear to remind us of yesteryear. I found safety here,
and these famous tales I know by heart. The tissues are ready to catch my tears, the cushion to catch my fall. Unknown is what will happen to my tears on a cold, dry floor, or to my body as it falls and hits the ground. Will it break? Will it bleed? Will I be okay?
Think you stated that the cushion will catch your tears?
The cushion will catch my fall.
The cushion will catch your fall.
Yeah. So this particular piece was inspired just by how we get very used to doing the same things, and we're very afraid and fearful to step out on faith and do something else. Because we're so comfortable with the routine and we're so uncomfortable and so afraid of the unknown. And it's just how you just get so stuck and you don't know what's next and you just get caught up in the cycle of questions. You know, what's going to happen, and how that can be such a hindrance to your progress.
You know, Louise Otto, she's a German swimmer, made the statement that history of all times and of today especially teaches that women will be forgotten if they forget to think about themselves. So by getting caught up in a lot of different things, it's so easy to forget about yourself and what you bring to the table. How does that statement fit in, if it fits in?
I mean, I this is Safia. I think it fits in, absolutely. Because I think the norm is, like, honestly, I'm just going to say what it is. You know, I think the norm is the expectation and how women operate is that everybody else comes first, they come second. They, you know, everybody else is promoted and pushed and, you know, their needs are second. And that's just the standard operating procedures. And it's uncomfortable and it doesn't feel right to promote yourself and to put yourself out there and to think about yourself. And there's so many what ifs with that. You know, how will I feel? How will this other person feel? How will that be received?
Yeah,
so
and women.
Okay, please. I'm sorry. This is a great conversation. Please, Safia, continue.
I was. This is Anastasia.
Oh, hello, Anastasia. Welcome.
Hi. I was saying that also, women made to feel guilty when they do start seeking themselves for themselves.
So how do we change this phenomenon? Yes. How do we change it?
I don't know.
That's a great question. That is a great question. You know, I think, you know, just by encouraging, and accepting women as leaders, women as being up front. I think more and more, as that is encouraged and accepted, I think that the comfortability level will rise with women really leaning in and taking control.
I like that. And to all of you, that's a perfect place to stop for tonight. We'll see you next week on The Power of Poetics with our special guest, Valerie Beers from Maine. So take care, everybody, and let poetry ring. Good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks. Good night.